What I'd like to present to you is research that was conducted after the deadline for paper submission. And so I'll briefly touch upon native bee diversity, which is what the title is in the program, and focus more on pollination efficiencies in red clover of various bees. So this is grover-driven research. Now, clover you all know, it's a legume. It's good for nitrogen fixation, so it's used as a rotation crop, and it's also good for hay. And a lot of the clover, the red clover that is produced in or grown in other parts of the country, comes from Oregon. Here, the climatic conditions are such that you've got a nice, mild, rainy winter, so that's good for plant growth. And then the summer is dry, so that's very good for seed production and harvest. And so there's four different clovers that are raised in Oregon. Most of you all will be familiar with white, red, and crimson, and then we also have arrowleaf clover that's grown. Now, these are all trifolium, the same genus, but they're very different in the visiting bees. And so white clover, for instance, honeybees do very well. But in red clover and arrowleaf clover, honeybees are not expected to do as well. And so that's the basis for this research that we conducted. It's sort of believed that the reason that honeybees don't do as well is the tongue length, but that's debated. That's not necessarily the only reason. Despite that, despite the fact that a lot of people don't think that honeybees do well, growers in Oregon, they rent 1 to 4 hives per acre. So it's a big investment for something that's not really doing the job. In contrast, we have a great diversity of native bees, but native bees, they're not consistent, they're not predictable, and they're just inadequate for the large number of flowers. We keep producing varieties, we produce more and more flowers, and then you need more and more bees. And we're not able to manage these. We have these populations, but there's no way we can domesticate them. And as we just talked about earlier, none of the commercial bees, Oregon is one of the states where we cannot import them. There's a ban on importing because of past experiences with diseases. And also, all the commercially available bees are exotic. So there is nothing else the growers can do but depend on the native populations. So the question basically we asked is, do bees vary in the pollination services that they're providing for red clover under no-choice situations? This is just to get a sense of, can they pollinate them efficiently? And right from Darwin's time, he's talked about how bumblebees are very efficient in red clover, but what we needed is sort of documentation that are they as good, are they better than honeybees in red clover. So we did an experiment where it was a cage study, no choice. The bees that were in there had to pollinate, they had no other foraging resource. And then we looked at seed yield, the total seed yield, but then we also looked at seed yield from individual florets. And in addition, we put pollen traps to see where the bees were foraging. This is honeybees. Compared the native bee diversity in red clover fields, and also compared the abundance during bloom. So the first, the no-choice experiment, we had these cages lined up along the road. And we had four treatments, three replications. Attracted a lot of attention as drivers were driving by. And there were four treatments. So we had honeybees, we did Bombus bosnesensikii, which is a native bee for our area, leafcutter bees, and control had no bees. And the honeybees, you know, familiar with the way they carry the pollen on their corbicula, same with the bumblebees. But the leafcutter bees actually collect their pollen on the lower part of their abdomen. Now the honeybees and the leafcutter bees are commercially available. So we were able to get hives and put them in the cages. Leafcutter bees, you can get these blocks and just put them out and then the bees will emerge. Bombus, the bumblebee, cannot be obtained commercially in Oregon. So what did we do? Well, we put an ad in the local newspaper and basically told the public that if they saw any bee nests in their backyard, front yard, call us. And I just thought I'd run by some of the hives that we collected. So, you know, there was one in a compost pile. There's this lady who went looking for peat moss and out came a bumblebee. And then here a little kid was actually sent to find out why this hot tub was leaking, and parents were pretty paranoid because these bumblebees came out. This was Comcast, who refused to go into the crawl space to put the cable until the bumblebees were gotten rid of. Bird nests are common. And this is my all-time favorite, where a lady called and said, my husband has this thing that he calls a vehicle, but basically it's something that he wants to refurbish, and out of this car seat were these rather mean-looking melanopicus that came out. So we picked up actually a large number of these hives, and then we put them, and here you can see how the bombus pretty much pounced on the flowers as soon as they were put into the cage. So this is at the start, and then very soon, very nice, they all dried up. At the same time that this was the bumblebee cage, the control cage was, the flowers were still in bloom because there was no pollination. But after a while, even those started turning a little brown, and so we started getting worried what's happening here. Nonetheless, we proceeded to take the seed yield, and we had this, I guess, this device that we got from our research firm and took it over. And so here's the numbers. So if you look at the seed weight, the clean seed, you can see the control was low. And then the bumblebee and the honeybee were actually pretty good. But then this was our problem, especially when I presented to the growers. Their open pollinator did twice as well as what we were able to achieve in the cages. One thing in retrospect we should have done is at the end when we took the harvest, we should have taken the wet weight of all the cages, and we didn't do that. So we do believe that the cage actually had sort of a hampering effect because these plants continue to produce flowers. And so because of the cage, perhaps they were not producing as much. And so the overall number of flowers, overall plant material was a lot less. But we went ahead and looked at the seed yield in individual flowers from each cage. And we had an undergraduate. Thank God for undergraduate. She looked at 10,000 flowers. And the range, the number of flowers, it varied from about 70 to 180. Sometimes you had a doublet, that's why you got 200. And red clover has actually two ovules. And if rarely are both of them pollinated. So if you get them both pollinated, then you get perfect pollination. Some of them were malformed, and then a few had a chalcid in them. But that was just a very small percentage. So again, remember those clover, the controls where the flowers were really dried? So here's a comparison between those dried flowers and those pollinated by the honeybee. And you can see that when you actually break them apart, there really isn't any seed. They just dry naturally. Another interesting thing, which again we talked to the growers, we asked them why there was this great diversity in color of seed in red clover. And they had all kinds of hypotheses saying that, well, it's the, you know, depends on when they mature, moisture, lots of different things. Turns out it's just genetic, so that all the seeds from one flower are going to be the same color. Well, here's the data. Looking at just 10 flowers, you can see that the honeybees and the bumblebees were very similar across the various treatments. And then the open pollinated was pretty similar. So if you look at the individual seed head, then the pollination in the open pollinated is similar to what we were able to get both with the honeybees and with the bumblebees. The leaf cutter was a little lower, and that's because we actually had a delay in when we actually put the leaf cutter bees in the cage. And then the control, of course, was zero, except for this one. Well, in this cage, one day when we were walking by, there was actually a bumblebee in the cage. Even though we had nailed the cage down, one bumblebee got in. And so we were able to get it out. So that explains that. And then we put these, some of you all may be familiar with these pollen traps that you can put in beehives. And pretty much what happens is that as the bees are coming back, the pollen is scraped off. Clover pollen is sort of darkish in color. And so here we have these pollen traps in hives which are in the center of a red clover field. But it tells you what the bees are actually doing. So the darker colored ones are the ones that are actually clover pollen here. So this was in the middle, beginning of August. You can see how the color changes. And then just within a couple of weeks, suddenly it's completely different. And we looked around and there was actually a false dandelion that seemed to have this color. But here, so for a grower's perspective, he's investing in these bees and they're actually just going and foraging somewhere else. So what happens with honeybees is not that they cannot pollinate because of tongue length or corolla tube size. It's just that it's a preference. And so if there's something else out there, then they prefer to go forage there rather than the red clover. And so then looking at diversity, we talked about this last time, this bee, this trap acts like a magnet for Hymenoptera, for a lot of bumblebees. So we put this out in clover fields, and here you can see the numbers that we were able to get. So for those of you who have tried this and haven't gotten the same results in Oregon, we seem to get, you know, that's a mean, an average of 100 in a two-day period. This is just native bees. And so we had 28 different species that we collected in these traps. The ones in red are the ones that were a little bit more common. The others, maybe we just got one or two. And what's interesting is occidentalis. Bombus occidentalis is one that is really, really drastically reduced in numbers, and we were able to see a few there. So maybe the population, at least in that particular spot, is increasing. And then looking at bloom, because this trap may be differentially attracting the different bees, we thought it's important to just go into the field and actually count. Just take 2-minute counts as we walk. And here's something really interesting, is that in the beginning, this, by the way, is when clover is in bloom. So the beginning period, there aren't very many, and then suddenly you get this big peak. So maybe if you could just increase the number of bees during this period, they could have increase in pollination. What are the strategies we could use for that? Well, one is putting those traps like sort of a clothesline. Would that be able to draw the bees into the field? We did this, and that data is still in progress. And a couple of the strategies we want to try next year is, can we increase floral abundance early so that we can draw the bees to the area and then they will forage? And two possibilities, one is adding like a floral border, or otherwise maybe just leaving a strip unmowed, because typically what they're doing is cutting for hay first. If they just left that, maybe that itself is enough to bring the bees earlier to the field. Thank you.